Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances. We're talking about working money doesn't suck. And because we don't want to get sued, this is for entertainment purposes only.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Follow our individual accounts at TheMarcusGarrett with one T on Twitter, two T's on Instagram, and everywhere else on Earth. And Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones.
I am. And today's episode is sponsored by Top Resume. For 10% off a resume writing service package, visit topresume.com/paychecks. Again, topresume.com/paychecks. And we'll tell you about them a little more later in this episode. So who's up this week, man?
Yeah, we're joined by Lynette Calfani Cox, a.k.a. the Money Coach. You may know her, world renowned. We had the chance to catch up with her at FinCon, and she dropped some knowledge on both the career and personal finance fronts.
So I'm not sure what it was, but it felt like y'all had the perfect mics. And I didn't realize this until I went to edit. And I was like, why am I so damn loud? So I was trying to solve for that. And y'all sounded perfect, like you were in a studio. Meanwhile, I sounded like I was on a struggle.
Yeah, I think the people would be sympathetic. You know, this is what happens with the live recordings. Y'all know the struggle is real. Doing one now. So I'll go ahead and drop the bomb. Turn 35 this weekend. So hopefully my dual set voice is still at the appropriate tone. I'm struggling, but I'm trying to do it for y'all, the people.
And I wasn't going to say anything. I was like, I know when we were talking up front, I was like, I mean, I understand, bro. It's not the same anymore at 35.
For the people who follow the accounts with one T or two T's, I mean, I think they've been following along. I dropped some off the bucket list. I'll just put that as a teaser. So if you want to make your way over to Instagram, that's two T's on Instagram. So the Marcus Garrett with two T's. You can see what I scratched off the bucket list if you haven't seen it. Yeah, I just dropped that teaser for the listening audience.
Cool, man. And so it's not going to be me screaming throughout the episode. I fixed it, but for some reason, it still sounds a little struggly, but it does get better throughout. So let's get into it. And here's our conversation with Lynette.
Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And we are the co-hosts of the Paychecks and Balances podcast. We talk about personal finance and career advice for millennials with the hope we don't bore them to sleep.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We're here recording live at FinCon, and I'm going to turn it back over you to the introduction because you have all the notes, and I'll be jumping in, peppering in with questions here and there.
Yeah, so we are live, and today we're joined by a special guest, Lynette Calfani Cox, a.k.a. the Money Coach. She's a personal finance expert, television and radio personality, and the author of numerous books, including the New York Times bestseller, Zero Debt, The Ultimate Guide to Financial Freedom. Lynette once had $100,000 in credit card debt. $100,000?
Don't judge me.
Show off.
Before paying it all off in 3 years and turning her financial life around. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Great to be here. It's been a fun event so far. FinCon 17 has been like off the chains.
Yeah, it's been crazy. So I finally started losing my voice. I was doing good the first 2 days. And exactly. Now I'm at that point where I'm on my Ricola.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I feel like all of us, you know, I heard somebody saying, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Farnoosh saying how much she slept yesterday.
I wish.
You know, to kind of catch up on the sleep. And FinCon will wear you down, but yes, it will also build you up because you'll go back with energy, you know, revitalized, thinking about new ideas, creative things to do, contacts you made, and of course, some good money tips and everything in the mix too. So
yes, yes. And so, you know, you've accomplished all of these amazing things, but going back to the beginning, for those that don't know, how did you become the money coach?
First, I was fired from my job. That's, you know, let's keep it real. When I really reflect and think back, before I started my business in 2003, so it's been almost 15 years, I actually had sort of the seeds of entrepreneurship planted in me from my father. So my dad was actually a shoeshine man from Harlem. And his father was a shoeshine man, and his father was a shoeshine man. So three generations. And my father, obviously, he didn't go to college. He didn't have a formal education. Neither of my parents, frankly, went to college. But my parents had five daughters together, and they always instilled in all of us five girls the importance of education. And they were like, which college will you be attending? Not are you going to college? Yep. Which college will you be attending? So long story short, when I was growing up, honestly, because I was bused and I went to very wealthy white neighborhoods, I was raised in Southern California, and I went to school in Brentwood, California, Pacific Palisades, Malibu area. And most of my white friends had very wealthy families. And so they would say, oh, come on over to a pool party. Or, you know, my dad's a doctor. My dad's an engineer. My dad's, you know, come ask your parents if they can say, you know, if you can come over. Oh, what does your dad do, by the way? And I was like, I didn't want to say my dad was a shoeshine man. Okay. So, but my dad, the reason our family moved from New York to Los Angeles was my dad wanted to become an actor.
Oh.
So, long story short, to kind of bring it home, I was like, my dad's an actor. I was like, maybe you saw him in E.T. because he was in E.T. and, you know, he did some different things. So, but even though initially I was ashamed, to be honest with you, of my father taught me so many great principles about fiscal responsibility, about entrepreneurship, about charting your own course, setting your own course in life and your own kind of brand. And later, it wasn't until later that I realized, well, dang, my father was the first true entrepreneur that I knew, you know?
Yeah, he was the first personal brand expert, it sounds like.
Totally. My father, he had a stands everywhere in Southern California, in car washes and hotels, high-end hotels. And he, because he was like super great with his craft, shining shoes and dyeing shoes, he could flip up the shoes in the air, flip it around, make the little rag pop and everything. And his tagline was Uncle Mike's, because everybody called him, his name is Michael Darrow, everybody called him Uncle Mike. And it was Uncle Mike's, where a dying art still lives. And dying, D-Y-E-I-N-G, because he knew how to dye your shoes good stuff. And so long story short, I'm going all way off the rails here. I don't know how we got here. But
well, actually, I do have a follow-up question. I've heard that over the years where I feel like people, they don't understand the entrepreneur mindset, and they actually come to respect it more after going to the career and doing the 9 to 5 and be like, I need to break out of this.
Totally.
So is there any entrepreneur secrets that you would share from your father?
Sure. Well, first, when I was saying about my father taught me great lessons, one thing my father taught me was that kind of like a biblical principle, frankly, when it says, you know, God is no respecter of persons. He taught me that all honest work is good work. I don't care if you're the janitor or the CEO, the maintenance man, the street sweeper, the secretary, the physicist, the teacher, the salesman, we're all the same. And we all have the same humanity. We all have the same goals and aspirations. We want to do well in life financially. We want security for our families. We want to be loved. We want to have great personal relationships. So my father taught me all honest work is good work. Stop caring so much about the title, how many zeros are in the bank account. My father also taught me about hard work, you know, that you got to get your hustle on. Nothing will be given to you. You have to work hard for it. And about the power of connections and relationships. My father influenced CEOs. People would ask him business advice all the time. When they literally wanted kind of like average Joe kind of insights, they would ask Uncle Mike. And so that personal connection actually was something that stayed with me and that I learned and I actually utilize in my business today. It helps me as a money coach. It helps me consulting to know the importance of relationships and networks and connections with people and just keeping it real. So
it also sounded like he was capitalizing on multiple income streams at a
absolutely.
Time when there no
absolutely.
Internet existed,
yeah.
no best
no,
practice
absolutely.
That existed.
And you know, you mentioned about, you know, just the sort of side hustle and kind of lessons learned. And people sometimes have a better appreciation after the corporate, after the 9 to 5 thing. Well, I distinctly remember one of my earliest memories about money growing up was my parents arguing about money. My mother used to be like, Michael, you need to get a job, okay? A real job. You got 5 mouths to feed here. Lucille Darrow wasn't playing, okay? She was like, you need to get a real job. And if it's raining outside in Southern California, and don't believe that song, it never rains in Southern California. No, it rains, okay? She was like, if it rains, your shine stand, you can't open, your workers can't be out there. So she was like, go to Florsheim. Go to the shoes, you know, the store. She said, you know more about shoes than all those guys. You'll be the manager of the store. And indeed, my father went to Florsheim. He was the manager. He was running the store. My father was miserable. That was like corporate for him. That was like being in a cubicle, okay? So he did it for about a year. He was like, I'm out. He couldn't take that, you know? So it's also a lesson about really finding your true passion. You know, we were talking about D1, the rapper who was here yesterday.
Yeah.
And about him, you know, brother who earned a degree in marketing, went to business school. He started off in engineering because his mom wanted him to be an engineer and said, you'll make a lot of money that way. He had to say, look, this is not my passion. He stopped. He became a math teacher. He loves education. He was helping the youth. And then even though he loves education, he said, I can have a bigger classroom on the stage. I can reach more people. So there's so many lessons to be learned when it comes to following your passion and figuring out for you what makes the magic happen for you and what inspires you to get up every day and keep pushing forward.
And that's a great point and segue, because I know we also spoke a few months back, and you know, I was talking about where I am and some of my professional goals. And so we have a lot of listeners who are working a 9-to-5 and want to earn more money on the side, or they're working a 9-to-5, want to get the hell out of the 9-to-5.
Right.
So what advice would you have for someone that's really struggling, saying they don't have enough time, they're burnt out, they're frustrated, but they really want to make that transition or that pivot?
It's rough. There's no question about it. I remember when I was at CNBC, I was writing my first book, Investing Success. And I was struggling to get it done because I was exhausted. I would leave early in the morning. I would come home 6 or 7 at night. And I was like, I'm too tired to write. And to be honest with you, it wasn't until I got a pink slip from CNBC, me and 200 other people, that I actually had the time to commit to writing the book in full. I did negotiate with my employers back then, not only a pay raise, but also some flexibility in my writing schedule. So what I did at one point was that I negotiated to have only to go to work at CNBC Monday through Thursday. And I was able to take Fridays off and fully commit to writing.
Nice.
And then it only lasted for like a couple months. And then the whole, you know, downsizing happened. Right. But I actually did negotiate that with my employer. So sometimes you can do creative strategies. And I mean, I negotiated a lot. I negotiated to put CNBC and Wall Street Journal on the cover of my book. Even after I left, I was like, y'all firing me? Oh, I'm getting something out of this. Okay. I'm not going away that quietly.
Give me them logos.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me ask a little bit about that. We had talked offline, so I want to share with the listeners as well. One of the advice that you gave us is actually not to quit your day job. I know this actually wasn't your choice, but
right.
How do you balance that? So you don't have time to do your side hustles and passions, but you're also advising not
right.
to quit the day
you
job.
You know, I feel like people discount or sometimes don't understand fully and appreciate the value of having a 9-to-5. You should look at a job as boot camp. Like, this is your training ground. This is where you're going to learn, because I'm telling you, no question about it. Everywhere where you're weak on the job as an employee is going to be magnified and show itself in your work as an entrepreneur. So if you're not good with technology, it's going to be even rougher for you on your own as an entrepreneur handling the technology. You have to hire somebody or really learn a lot. If you're not very well organized, that lack of organizational skills is going to be reflected in your ownership of the business. If you're sort of not as efficient in your work, if you kind of, I won't say slack off, but if you're a person who, you know, you're like a water cooler person, hanging out, talking a lot, spending on email, surfing, if you're not like really incredibly productive on the job right now, you're not going to be as productive as a business owner. So use the 9-to-5 time as training ground. And then, of course, set yourself up financially. I mean, I think that a lot of us should be leveraging what we have in terms of the resources that the corporate culture might offer to us. So I tell people, though, don't believe for a moment that you can't replicate as an entrepreneur every benefit that you have as an employee. Because I know a lot of people are scared to make that leap from employee to entrepreneur because they're like, I need a paycheck. Okay. I got a 401k or a 403b plan. I'm getting some health benefits up in this joint. I'm not trying to leave all of that. I got kids to feed. I got a roof over my head to pay for. However, trust me when I say that as an entrepreneur, I have a very healthy six-figure 401k. Okay. And my husband and I have 401ks. I mean, so of course, when I was at Wall Street Journal and CNBC, I also had a 401k through my employer. Now, of course, I have to self-fund it. You get obviously great tax benefits for doing so, but it's, you know, you need to understand that you can have, you know, I have a high deductible health insurance plan. We maxed that out. We paid, I think, $6,500 or whatever the family maximum is this year to fund that and to get a tax credit. So all of the same things. It's not like, oh, I can't have health insurance. You can have health insurance. You're going to have to pay for it, and you're going to get a tax benefit for doing so. But you can still do the other stuff as well, you know. So it's about planning and strategizing and knowing sort of the tools and resources that are available to you and just kind of how to go about it.
Hey, folks, we're taking a quick break from our chat with Lynette to tell you a little more about Top Resume, the leading professional resume writing service that's helped over 300,000, yes, 300,000 professionals land 2 to 3 times more interviews and get jobs.
Yeah, that get jobs is the crucial component. And with Top Resume, you'll work one-on-one with an expert writer who'll help you tell a compelling story to hiring managers like us.
Yep.
They also offer a 60-day interview guarantee. This means if you don't double your interviews, they'll rewrite your resume for free.
Free. And since people like stats, you should know that a professionally written resume is 60% more likely to be read by recruiters like me. I can co-sign that from my recruiting experience. So don't miss out on interviews because your resume isn't showcasing your dopeness. You need that.
And for a free confidential resume review and 10% off a resume writing service package, visit topresume.com/paychecks. Again, that's topresume.com/paychecks.
You better go get it.
Now, a lot of people struggle with the, I need to have this amount of money saved. And I know it's going to be different because everyone's right. situation is different. The right. cost of living is different. But any advice around just generally tucking money away so that you can take that leap or have a choice to be able to take that leap?
Sure. I think a couple things. One is if you're in a relationship, if you have a partner with you, married or a very significant other who's living with you or who you're kind of committed to. It's often a good idea for one person to do the corporate thing in the initial part, if that's what you guys choose to do, and the other person to take the entrepreneurial path. I really do think it's important to be on the same page, though. To me, a house divided cannot stand. And if the other person is not supportive of your entrepreneurial endeavors, there is going to be friction. There's going to be
beef,
total beef, and a little, you know, pushback. Or sometimes resentment, and then it's like, okay, you slowing my roll here. You know, it's weakening my ability to move forward. So sometimes if a couple is involved, strategize together, look at it. I know many couples, frankly, who want to do what my husband and I do. We call ourselves Mr. and Mrs. Inc. I mean, because we love the entrepreneurial lifestyle. We totally mix business and pleasure. We're cool with that. But we came to this together as entrepreneurs. I had my business, he had his business, then we merged our companies together. But just long story short, for couples, I think that sometimes that corporate job, if one person keeps it, actually that can be a source of quote unquote stable income while you go into the first year and building up the revenue side. But then also, even if you're single, even if you don't have another person or whatever, little by little, you can be socking money away, what I call your kind of goal fund or your dream fund to help finance your dreams. Don't try to do it all at once and think, okay, I'm gonna quit my job at this year or this month, and then I need to have $10,000. Well, you're not gonna just magically have $10,000. Like, you know, if you're planning a 10-month thing, sock away $1,000 a month or sock away $500 a month, whatever you can afford to do. Supplement that with some side hustle work. You know, be creative in generating an income stream that can support you, because that first year could be rough. I was incredibly lucky, came out the gate extremely strong, and you know, it worked, and thank God. Where's the wood for me to knock on, you know? So
you said a couple of things there. The reason I was laughing is someone told me to call it an FU fund. So you're sitting in a meeting like, FU, I'm out.
Yeah.
So goal fund is what we'll use on this particular show. You said Mr. and Mrs. Inc. What's your advice on people? Do they need to incorporate? Do they need to do a 1099? Do they just walk away? What is your advice for that transition?
So in terms of the structure of your business, my company is an LLC for federal income tax purposes. We have an S Corp, and we changed to an S Corp about 4 years ago. I was like, I'm paying way too much in self-employment taxes, and this is killing me. And I live in a high tax state in New Jersey. It's ridiculous. Everything in New Jersey is high. We call it the money belt. It just sucks the money right out of you, you know? So,
Shout out to New Jersey.
I was like, show me the Romney method, okay? Show me the Newt Gingrich method. Show me. I want to know what they did so they can save on their taxes. And for their businesses, I learned that they established them and created them as S-Corps. Google it, you know, but yeah. Trust and believe. I found an accountant. I mean, I did some serious research. I'm serious about taxes. You guys don't even know I'm like nuts about taxes. So, because I pay a ridiculous amount in tax. So anyway, I researched all around, and I was I had a extremely expensive accounting firm, and you know, that's another story. But anyway, fired that accounting firm, and I found an accounting firm in Colorado Springs, Colorado. This guy, husband and wife duo, actually, who run, and they have a sort of a medium sized company, Watson CPA. Shout out to my people at Watson, the Watson Group. But honestly, I loved that Jason Watson, his wife is Tina, they get it because, A, they're entrepreneurs. They have a lot of entrepreneurial clients. And he's a serious expert on S-Corps for small business owners and the tax advantages you get on that side. So afterward, I researched, I read, he had written so many articles. I was like, oh, I'm hiring this guy. But I did. I interviewed three firms. And then, and sure enough, he was the one that I liked. And I went with them. We've been very happy with them. So the structure of your business, I would say, a lot of people start off, they don't incorporate in any way. They'll do the sort of mom and pop operation. And I think that's kind of a big mistake. So I think that you should figure out the legal strategy, the legal structure that works best for you. I like the protection of an LLC. And then, like I said, for federal tax purposes, I like the S-Corp. So.
And so we're rounding toward the end of the show here, and this time has went by so fast. That was perfect. I just got the hook almost put out on stage. So wrapping up, one piece of financial advice that you would give to someone who's just getting started or got to the point where they said, oh, crap, I need to get my life together.
Right. So one is, I guess I would say, take an honest look in the mirror. I feel like so many of us, honestly, we're in denial. And I know I went through this for a long time. Sometimes you can have a nice salary. You can have either high income or just kind of be stable. Like you're just kind of floating along. You're not really getting ahead. You're more or less treading water. But you're like, well, I'm doing okay because I don't worry about how I'm going to pay my mortgage or my rent. And, you know, the food is on the table. So we can sort of rationalize and justify where we are and why we're not further ahead in our careers. So when I say take a hard look in the mirror, I would say, what's the gap between where you are now and where you really want to be? And that requires a little bit of vision and as I mentioned before, sort of goal setting. Because if you know, honestly, yeah, I'm making $80,000 a year or I'm making $280,000 a year, but I'd like to be making X and, you know, whatever, 80 times X, whatever it is for you. If it's $40,000 and you want to make $100,000, whatever your goals are financially or career-wise, I think you need to think about, what have I done? This is where it requires looking in the mirror, honestly. What have I done to get me there? And what have I failed to do to really move the needle and move forward? And a lot of times people don't want to be critical or reflective and honest in their analysis of the things that they've failed to do. People who can have a wake-up call like me, I'll be like, okay, I was overspending. I got myself into a lot of debt. I had $100,000 in bills, blah, blah, blah. But then I had to take a hard look in the mirror and say, wow, in my previous relationship with my ex-husband, which is when I was in debt and had a ridiculous amount of financial drama and whatnot, I was like, I abdicated so much financial responsibility. I blamed him for things. I didn't take ownership. So, you know, it requires a little more like self-reflection. So I don't know. That's kind of a little woo-woo, but whatever.
No, that's helpful because it ties together several threads that we've talked about with past guests. But Lynette, really appreciate you joining us. And just real quick, where can people find you on the internets?
Sure. On the interwebs, you can reach me on my free financial advice site, askthemoneycoach.com. And also, we just launched Money Coach University, my video-based learning platform as well.
Awesome. So we'll have all that in the show notes. And yeah, again, thanks for joining us.
Thank
it's been fun.
Thank you. I appreciate you both, Rich Marks.
Thank you.
Yep. Use the 9 to 5 as a training ground. I love that.
Yeah, I really like what you had to say about her father and the relationship they have. And also demonstrating that the entrepreneur lifestyle might be for some of us out there. I mean, I think a lot of us are like, how do I leave the 9-to-5, trying to escape. And I think it's also about establishing that financial independence. And as I'm going to continue to hit on both on this episode and future episodes, you know, the average millionaire has 3 to 7 income streams. So it's not like they have that one income stream. They're like, I'm good. Yeah. You know, Mark Zuckerberg isn't like, yo, Facebook, I'm straight. Like, you know, if you really want to make it rain, I guess. I was trying to see where I was going to go with that. You want multiple thunderstorms. You want it to always be a chance of cloudiness.
Make it clap. That's all I got.
I feel like that. Yeah, moving on.
Yeah, that's so. That probably wasn't the most appropriate reference to make, but thunderstorms, clap. Anyway, moving on.
No hands. And speaking of no hands, you can visit with your hands paychecksandbalances.com/first time. For those of you who haven't already, I dropped the video. So we're making our debut back onto the YouTube, spreading like the blog. Shout out to the episode with Damon Young, where we are moving back into video on YouTube, where I talk about the first time I fell in love with debt. And I give you two ways to look at it. You can either read it. There's a 2-part series on the website. You can find that at paychecksandbalances.com/first time, all one word. Or you can also find the video there if you just want to check it out on YouTube.
It's a long time coming, man.
I feel like most things are, at least when it comes to us.
Yeah, it seems that way. It seems but that we, way.
We deliver on most of our promises. I think we're hitting about 90, 95%.
Like 93 is what I would say.
That'll work.
So if you've enjoyed today's episode or found it useful, be sure to share and hit us with those 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. As we always say, the more people we reach, the more people we help.
And don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email, where you can receive our weekly newsletter where we share interesting articles we read, action items from each episode, and much more.
And so thanks to everyone for listening. Next week, we'll be back with our last conversation from FinCon. But until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.